Hey, this is Jack O'Shea from Bayside, and you're listening to my chapter of As the Story Grows.
What would you say you do here?
Have a good time all the time.
Dominate.
Who's got it better than us?
Nobody!
What in God's holy name are you blathering about?
Well, I'll tell you what I'm blathering about. I've got information, man.
I want you to be realistic.
What do you love about music?
Being realistic.
As the story grows.
I always wanted to be part of a small rebellion.
You got this, Travis. Make them wait for it.
Boom. Well, I've been dead all day. Could you tell? Could you tell? This is where I leave here and I save myself. There's a God in hell. Let us pray to be cleansed of everything that we've said. Will I fall asleep? Can this fade away? Oh my God, I am so full of shit. I've been playing a part ever since I was a kid. Now the bullshit is had enough, but I've had enough.
I have to be honest with you. When Jamie, I've never listened to Bayside in my life until Jamie hit me up and asked me if I'd be interested in talking with you. And I was like, oh yeah, sure. And then I went and Spotify and just all right, this is their newest album and I'll go backwards. And I was like, oh, why have I never listened to Bayside? They're amazing.
Oh, thanks, man. Get that a lot, and we just kind of, I feel like it's a strange phenomenon that happened with us. I think because of the bands that we kind of got grouped together with as we were coming up, I think that everyone had a preconceived notion of what we were. And then I can't tell you how many times I hear that, be like, I had no idea that's what you guys were. I always thought you were something completely different, and I never gave you a chance. So, hey, I don't care if anyone comes late to the party. It's great that you're there at all. That's awesome.
Well, right, I was like, I think because you were on Victory at the time of Hawthorne Heights and Silverstein and that whole Warped Tour quote unquote emo thing that had nothing to do with emo. It was like, oh, they're one of those bands, and you just wrote you off.
Yeah, totally.
And the funny thing is, I follow you on Instagram. I follow Bayside on Instagram. I follow Anthony on Instagram. Mostly because of association. It's like you guys are friends with Ethan Luck and some other people I follow, so I've known what Bayside is doing, but I've never listened. And then I was like, oh, I should probably listen to their music if I'm going to talk to Jack. And I was like, oh, I really like this band. They're a punk band that I really dig. I would have dug them back in the day, but I just wrote you off because of who you were associated with and what label you were on at the time.
Yeah, we definitely get that a lot. And again, not that there's anything wrong with the other bands, but I think everyone just assumed because. And it's one of those things when you're on a label like Victory, they want to kind of put you out with bands on Victory. So we ended up doing a lot of tours with bands like Hawthorne Heights and Aiden and Silverstein, who are all good friends of ours. But stylistically, I've never felt we've been, because I think that we are a little bit just, Bayside is a little bit of a different band. So it just becomes, I think they were a hard band to kind of pair up on a tour typically anyway. So they're bands that make sense for us to go on tour with, some more than others. But, at that point, I think, just by virtue of having done so much headlining, we kind of developed our own fan base and kind of did our own thing. And you're friends with Ethan. Are you follow Ethan Luck too? Ethan Luck's one of my best friends down here in Nashville.
Yeah, I know you just did a tour with him recently. Yeah, I've been a fan of Ethan and his work for a long time. So,
yeah, his new record is crazy good too. He just finished. I think he's just released one song from it, but two songs from it. But man, so good.
Yeah, I've heard the one single. I've not heard more. Yeah, I'm super stoked for his new record.
Oh, it's really the whole record is really good. He played one show with Five Iron Frenzy here in Nashville at Exit Inn, and he was opening for them. It was his first show. He was I'm so nervous, but he had a band, and everyone in the band was just an incredibly competent musician, really skilled. So just it sounded like he'd been doing it for years. It just sounded it was album quality. It was really impressive. He was how was it? I'm really nervous. I was it sounded. You sounded great, man. I don't know why you're nervous. You and all these guys are some of the best people I know as far as playing music.
That's so great. That's so great. Yeah, and I think because I associate you and the guys from Bayside with Ethan and Newfound Glory, and like I think I've come to think you were a Nashville or a Franklin band. But I was looking today, you guys are from New York?
Yeah, well, I grew up in Massachusetts. I moved to New York in 2003 when I joined Bayside, but the rest of the guys were all New York based. Anthony and I moved to Nashville just about 5.5 years ago. So we've only been, yeah, we're recent transplants. Ethan's been here for going on 12 or 13 years about 12 or 13 years. But yeah, Ant and I just moved here about 5 years ago.
Oh, that's crazy. So you're from Massachusetts originally?
Yeah, I grew up in Central Mass and then I went to college and outside of Boston and was living in Somerville for a long time and then kind of just was getting fed up with the corporate job that I had. And through a friend who had been touring with a band called Junction 18, was told that Bayside was looking for another guitar player and did I want to quit my life and go join the circus? And I said yes. And here I am today. And here I am some 16 years later.
That's amazing. So we'll jump back a little bit. What got you into music originally?
Well, I have a friend named Kevin who is, he works really closely with the Dropkick Murphys camp, but that he's been like kind of my longest friend. I've known him since, longest friend that I'm still in kind of close contact with. I've known him since I was, maybe 8 years old. And when I was 8, he was also 8 and he was listening to, I think he was kind of weirdly advanced for his age. He was listening to a lot of like Led Zeppelin and AC/DC, and then kind of got me into all of the old New York hardcore stuff, even when I was hardcore and thrash and like a lot of like black metal and stuff, even when I was between 8 and 12 years old. But going over and hanging out with him, he had a guitar, and I just thought that was about the best thing in the world. So he ended up selling me his old guitar when he got a new one. And then the both of us had guitars, so we would kind of just make tape recordings of stuff. And at the time, we'd been listening to like early Metallica, AC/DC, again, like Zeppelin. So we would try, and at that point, I mean, we're limited to just bar chords at best. But we used to kind of write punk rock songs. And I know at that time, too, like that Sex Pistols, Nevermind the Bullets was a big record for me, just because I loved a lot of the metal, and I loved a lot of soloing, and I knew that that's what I really liked. But just, I just didn't have any skill. So the Sex Pistols, for me, was something, I think I got out of the Sex Pistols, but a lot of people who grew up 15 years later got out of bands like Green Day when Dookie came out, where it was like, I want to play guitar, and this is all chords that I can play. And like, I can go through and I can play this record. And for me, like that Nevermind the Bullocks was like, all right, I can play Anarchy in the UK. I can play God Save the Queen. I can play like EMI. So that for me was like one of the entry points. And it was kind of, I guess, the beginning of me being able to play songs through, where I was like, oh my God, I can play like pretty good, and I can play God Save the Queen. And then from that, the both of us just started writing our own stuff kind of in that vein. And that's kind of where it began.
That's cool. Did you form a band with that friend?
You know what? I was in a band with him when I was like in seventh and eighth grade. It was with him and a couple other guys from Central Massachusetts. Actually, it's funny, the drummer from Dropkick Murphys was in that band too. And I played like one good show with them at my parochial school, eighth grade dance, where we played a handful of originals and played like a Misfits cover. So it was, that was the band. And then I had been in like a bunch of other, when I use the word bands, they were like basement tours where we would show up and all our friends would go to someone's house and we'd bring small amps and we'd do kind of shows in basements and things like that. But, you know, when you're 11 years old or 12 years old, there's not really like, I guess there could be, but we certainly weren't in bands, so to speak, at least. And so when we got to high school, the band that my friend Kevin was in with the rest of those guys kind of went on to do a lot of kind of East Coast touring in that hardcore scene. And they did pretty well, and they all kind of ended up doing a bunch of different projects. And then I kind of went off. I moved out to Worcester from that area, which was Leominster. I moved up there and then kind of ended up just being in high school and didn't have the same group. I never found that group of friends in high school. I had a lot of other friends, but none that were kind of interested in the same type of music. I had a couple friends in high school that were more into punk rock and more into the music that I wanted to do. And I had, and I had some opportunity to play some music with him, but it was never as, I didn't have a group of friends as ambitious musically, I guess, as the ones that I had when I was in kind of elementary school and junior high.
So did you not have any like musical output or bands until you joined Bayside?
Oh, no, that's not true. I went through high school and I had kind of done, I would just get together with friends and we would just sort of set up and play music. We kind of just write improv stuff and do things like that. And through the time I was in college, I was in a bunch of different bands. I was in a band with a bunch of my college friends called Slave One, and our big show with them was we opened for Ween in Somerville in like 94. We did a bunch of us lived in a house that had a basement that we threw parties at, and we had built a stage and had a PA in the basement, so we would have a lot of kind of basement shows again and stuff like that, and played a little bit out around Boston with that band. Got out of college and started, I joined a 5-piece hardcore band, and kind of just naturally it ended up, people were leaving, people came in, and at the end of it, I kind of joined as a guitar player in that band, and at the end of the day, that band became a 3-piece prog metal band where I was singing and playing guitar with a bass player and a drummer. And that band was called Fingerbomb, which is a terrible name, but it was the name that I inherited with the band, and we just kind of kept it. But that was fun. I ended up, writing a lot of really self-indulgent music where I was writing. The three of us would come out with like 9-minute songs with multiple parts, some of them not repeating, and there'd be three or four guitar solos that would be mostly noise and delay-based. And we ended up playing in town with a bunch of more like straight prog rock bands that were more reminiscent of bands like Yes and Rush. And it's actually through that band, there was a band called Sunset is a Battle in Boston that's actually still kind of doing stuff, and they're really good. But through Sunset is a Battle is how I ended up ultimately getting into Bayside, because the drummer of Sunset is a Battle was Jim Mitchell, who ended up playing drums in Bayside for Sirens and Condolences, and he was the one who kind of brought me in. And the guitar player of that band was the guitar player of the band Junction 18, and that was my entry point into Bayside. So I was in bands through college and afterwards, but nothing that would be really notable and nothing that really toured outside of just regionally.
You guys did a Sirens and Condolences with Jay Robbins. What was working with him like?
It was amazing. It was my first kind of real studio experience. I had done a lot of small recording stuff, kind of like pay for demo type small studio things. And I had a friend who was I had a friend who I used to work with when I was living in Boston, who is an excellent engineer, an incredible guitar player, a really good technical drummer. And he's done a lot of work with, he had actually done a lot of writing and work with James LaBrie, who is the singer of Dream Theater, and was kind of working with as a part-time drum technician for Mike Mangini, who is like a kind of a Berkeley super session drummer who died. He's like a kind of one of the mega session dudes who has like I don't know if he still holds it, but it was like the world record for the most single strokes in a minute, like that type of stuff. So he was really into that techie prog stuff. So I had recorded some with him, but when we got into the studio with like Jay Robbins, that was like, we're making a full record. We're here for like 4 weeks. We're living in Maryland. This is going to be an excellent experience. And also working with Jay Robbins was kind of like, holy crap, like, this is great. Like, I love, you know, Jawbox is amazing. Just kind of like one of these things where just became, Jawbox and Burning Airlines. It was like, holy crap, like, look at this guy. So he was incredibly friendly. He was helpful with that. It was a weird record to make because I was playing bass on that, but I didn't really know. The bass player that we had in Bayside at the time was not. He wrote all the lyrics on Sirens and Condolences, but as far as his musical prowess goes, he was not a skilled musician. And I don't think I'm not saying anything right now that he wouldn't tell you himself. He was always saying stuff like, I don't even like music. I just want to write. I mean, he really just wanted to write this sad poetry. and have a band. And so we rolled into the studio, and he didn't even come. And this was, at that point, I'd only been in Bayside for a couple of months. So I had, he was like, oh yeah, by the way, you're going to play bass on the record. I was like, oh, okay, here we go. So we got into drums, we finished with drums, and then I started tracking bass, and a lot of the stuff is, the bass lines on Sirens are definitely nothing overly creative. Also, I was kind of writing with the thought in mind that I'm going to be writing these parts for somebody who doesn't really play bass very well. So it kind of limited, it made it a little bit easier in the sense that I wasn't having to really think too hard about it. So I got through doing bass, and Anthony did guitar. He did the rhythm guitars, and then he was like, okay, great, on to vocals. And I was like, oh, no, I still have to do my stuff. He's like, what do you mean? He was like, you're the bass player. I was like, no, I'm the guitar player. I just came in to do bass. Apparently the other guy's not here. So went in, and so I got to record kind of twice with him. But, yeah, it was just a really good experience. It was a lot of fun. The three of us got along real well. We were kind of all excited to be there. We were excited to be signed to Victory. Despite everything that we had heard from people who were like, just be careful when you're signed to Victory. And, you know, it's like one of those things when you're on a band and you're unsigned and a label wants to put your record into stores, it's very enticing. So we were like, let's do it. And it just became this whole, everything about surrounding the recording of that was something I'll always remember, really positive. And yeah, again, Jen was really supportive. And just, there are definitely engineers and situations to record where it becomes more stressful and not, you feel like you're kind of being just stunted a little bit creatively or productively. And he was not one of those. It was like a very natural, very kind of comfortable recording process.
You brought up being signed to Victory Records. What was that like for you? Was it good for you, or did it dissolve over time, or...
Well, we successfully completed our contract, and I think the one thing that I will say about Victory, they definitely have a reputation, and I'm not going to really get into that, but I will say that being on Victory taught us as a band to be very self-sufficient, and we never really offered a lot of aid in the sense of like tour support, or like we were never just like, here's a bunch of money, go do stuff. And it was kind of like, hey, get in there, we're going to pay to make your record, and we're going to put it in stores. And then you get on the road and you do what you do. You play the music, you win fans, you make a career for yourself. So I think in a lot of respects, because we had that experience where it was almost like learning to swim by being thrown into the pool, the band, I think that part of the reason that we are still a band today is because we had learned a lot of the pitfalls of being in a band, and we had seen a lot of other bands that were kind of given a lot more opportunities up front that they didn't necessarily work for. And that's not a disparaging comment, but you know, a lot of bands all of a sudden they find themselves on really great tours. They find themselves with really great deals where they're making these incredibly expensive records, or, you know, they're getting tour support in the form of like having like a real big international presence or something like that. We really kind of didn't get a ton of that. So it just forced us to kind of fight for what we got. So it's a mixed blessing. In retrospect, would I have loved to have been on a label that would have made things a lot easier and kind of set us up a little bit better? Of course. But I also, who knows what would have happened then? I think it's a testament to, I mean, it's certainly a testament to people like Anthony, who is one of the most determined people that I know, who's really kind of puts his head down and just gets it done. And then, you know, it's the rest of us as well, just all being dedicated to this product and to this entity that is Bayside.
So I know you guys did the self-titled album in 05, but I know touring on that record, you guys had a pretty horrific van accident on that tour. I'm curious if you'd be interested in talking about that, or if that's something you don't want to get into.
Yeah, I mean, I don't like talking about it too much. It's something that we keep is pretty personal. You know, a lot of people who are familiar with our band know that our drummer, John, passed. And Nick had been pretty injured in that. We had some crew that was really injured. And we just dealt with it the way that we did, by kind of keeping going. And, you know, that was just something. We're not afraid to talk about it necessarily, but it's something that's pretty personal for a lot of us. And it's, you know, it certainly isn't out of any lack of respect for John or for his memory, but it was a very formative experience for us as a band. I think it changed our perspective in a lot of ways. And I think that it was... we were happy to have been able to learn and to gain from that experience and to move on as a band. But it's certainly something that we're never going to forget. And, you know, he's a person that certainly was hugely influential to me as a friend and as a bandmate.
Should we still set his play? Should we still save his chair? Should we still buy him gifts? And if we don't, did we not care? It makes you think about the life you've led, the shit you've done, the things you've said, and it's grounding.
I know the completion of your contract, you guys ended up on Wind Up, which, but what was that relationship like? With Killing Time?
That was as close to a major label as we've ever been on at the time. It was still kind of an independently owned record label, but they did have a lot more commercial success with active rock bands. I mean, they had bands like, you know, Seether, Finger Eleven, Creed, Evanescence, Drowning Pool. So they were putting a lot of bands onto like active rock radio. And I think at the time we were, and you know, because it was a label that had a bunch of, it certainly had funding in a different way that we were never used to. So they were able to put more money into like actually developing a record, and we were able to work with Gil Norton, who had done some records that all of us collectively were like, these are great records. We all love this broken content, and sonically we like these records. We ended up doing that record. We spent a lot of time writing that record. We spent a lot of time recording that record in two chunks, and we worked very closely with that group, with Gil, and that, I feel like that was my personal favorite recording experience, just in the sense that, we were able to make the record on our own terms. It was really kind of left up to us. The label were keeping tabs on us and making sure that we weren't writing stuff that was going to be off base or off brand. But, we finished with a record that I think is still my favorite Bayside record.
Yeah, I was definitely going to ask about working with Gil Norton, who has just produced some amazing records, all those Pixie records and, you know, Futures. And
we were talking about us as a rock band, and the color and the shape that Foo Fighters record, I think, is like such the way that record comes out. It comes out swinging. It's incredibly heavy. It's like just a guitar-driven rock and roll record that's just aggressive and relentless. And like, it's just got huge guitars, it's got huge drums, just everything about that production was kind of like what we liked. And then also, you know, there's a lot of his other catalog with Counting Crows and with the Pixies, and there were so many other factors where, I mean, I will say this about Bayside, I think it's a band that really does embrace dynamics in our songwriting process, and I think as much as possible, it's always an active choice to make things a little bit more dynamic and to make things a little bit, kind of throw some left turns into what would otherwise be straightforward songwriting. So, you know, we knew that he was capable of handling all of the turns. But yeah, and it's unfortunate that the record came out on Wind Up right at the time that the label was transitioning from ownership. So we were kind of told a lot of things were going to happen and just, you know, kind of lost in the shuffle. And I think we kind of had our major label experience where there was a bunch of money invested into the product, which ultimately never was released the way that it was intended to be.
Yeah, for sure. I'm going to jump back a bit, because we kind of hit on it already. What was it like being lumped into that scene with kind of Silverstein and Hawthorne Heights and Take You Back Sunday? Was it?
Those bands are some of our really good friends. I know I'm still friendly with most of the people and all those bands we just talked about. But we were aware that sonically we were not exactly like, even we weren't like a great match for a lot of those tours that we went on, as far as like, well, we don't really sound like you guys. We don't really sound like you guys. I'm not sure that your fans were going to like us or, you know, our fans are going to like you guys. Everything, but we had relative success with I know one of the earlier tours we did was with Silverstein, who are substantially heavier, I think, well, vocally heavier than us for sure. Mm-hmm. But you know, those were all some of those tours. The tours that we've done with Hawthorne Heights, we had toured with them in Europe, and that's one of my all time favorite tours. We toured with Hawthorne Heights, Silverstein, and Aiden in Europe, and that was just again like one of my all time favorite tours to have been on. And then, yeah, touring with Silverstein in the U.S., that was like one of my first full U.S. tours was with them, right after kind of right when their record was coming out and we had signed to Victory, but our record hadn't come out yet. So there's just so many positive memories there, and just playing shows with them. I remember, like, all those guys when my folks were still living in Worcester, we would play shows at the, like, Skate Fest at the Palladium, and then all the Victory bands would come over to my mom's house and go swimming afterwards. So we had a great camaraderie, and there was, like, a really good relationship as far as, like, these are all, like, a lot of the bands on Victory that we were affiliated with became really close friends. Musically, I don't know that it made a ton of sense, and I think that's not really anyone's fault. It's just that I think that we were a tough band to kind of pair up and stick on a tour, because I think that when people ask how I described our band, and I'll call it a punk rock band, but I think that we're more of like a rock, just like a kind of a guitar rock band than we are a real true punk band. When I think about, like, real true punk bands, I'm thinking of, like, Anti-Flag or The Casualties, or, like, kind of like, there's more of like a, I think that there's an element of being polished and somewhat of a more kind of like a technical angle on some of the stuff that we've done that I would say kind of alienates us from more like raw, aggressive punk music, but a level of not quite as polished as some of like the poppier acts that we would have gone out with.
How'd you guys hook up with Hopeless Records?
After Windup, we were looking around labels, and we had been talking to a couple of them, and the Hopeless was just very genuine. They had we had met with them a bunch. We just got a really positive, vibe from them. We liked the people that were working there. We liked what they were doing with their band. At the time, again, we weren't really sure that we fit in with the roster, but that was something that just felt comfortable to us at that point. We knew that we kind of were always going to be slightly different. And, you know, we just had heard a lot about that label, and they wanted to work with us the most. And I think that was ultimately what you want in any sort of a situation like that, is you want the person who's going to be the most excited to have you there. Rather than what might look the coolest, or what, you know, if you can be on the coolest label in the world, but they don't give a shit about you, or not that, you know, if they don't care enough about you to actually invest time or manpower into helping you do what you need to do, then that's kind of a bad pairing. But yeah, Hopeless has been very helpful, and they're truthful. They're kind of like a real stand up label. So they've been really good to us, and I like all the people that I know who work there. And I probably like the people I don't know who work there. Just haven't met them yet. But we've met most of them.
You guys have a Acoustic Volume 2 record coming out later this year?
Yeah, we sure do. Okay. Should be coming out in pretty soon, a couple of weeks. And we're going to 28th, and we hit the road with that on this November, right after Thanksgiving, and we're going to be doing a full U.S. over the course of kind of, we start right after Thanksgiving, and then we go until a little bit before Christmas to do the East Coast and some of the Midwest, and then we're home for Christmas and New Year's, and then middle of January through February, we're going to be out in the West Coast, and kind of West Coast, Southwest, and all stuff in between. So, yeah, really excited, and it's not, you know, it's funny because people are like, this is a departure. And it's like, not really, man. We've been playing acoustic. I mean, Anthony and I do acoustic shows all the time. We've always been able to pull off a lot of our stuff acoustic. This last holiday season, last Christmas time, we had done a full band acoustic set for a few shows just in the Northeast to kind of test the water. And when that went pretty well, we were all pretty happy with the way that happened. We knew we were taking some time off from touring to start writing another record. That just seemed like something that we could do for fun. And we talked to Hopeless about putting out another acoustic record, and they were like, yeah, sure, let's make it. We'll see how it goes. And yeah, I'm really proud of it. It came out well, and We have a good, we have a great video for the new song that's being received really well. We just released a second song on there for, which is, the whole record is basically, it's reimagined songs that are kind of treated differently. Nothing is really straight the way that it would be originally done. And again, with a full band, it makes it sound a little bit fuller. So full band, some clean electric guitars, percussion, keys, kind of other extra instrumentation. So kind of a different approach on all that stuff. And then the new song, It Don't Exist. So this tour will be a little bit different in the sense that we'll be doing acoustic, but there'll be some, we'll have keys. We have, I think it's going to be a lot of fun. I think it's going to breathe life into songs that we either have never played or have just done as acoustic stuff. But yeah, people seem to be enjoying what they've heard so far. So hopefully that continues and we'll see how that sort of goes.
Cool. And then I know you're doing a solo thing. You went on tour with Ethan Luck, as we talked about earlier this year, and you're going on tour with Nathan Gray this fall.
Yeah. The whole thing got born kind of out of a conversation that I was having with Ethan. We were just hanging out, having drinks at his house. And he was like, we should go on tour together. And of course we were drinking. So I'm like, yeah, that'd be awesome. And then the next day, it's kind of like, I'm not going to go on tour. I don't have a record to promote. I don't have anything. And he's like, well, let's just make one. So kind of over the course of a week and a half or so, I went over to Ethan's. We kind of did the record in his basement, had a friend, had a mutual friend mix it. And, recorded one of the songs out in California while I was writing with Bayside at a studio out there that a friend of ours owns. And then I had five songs and I kind of was like, what do I do with this? And I was speaking with our manager. And I was like, look, I want this out, but I kind of want to just get it out quick because I want to do this tour with a friend. So I kind of ran it by Hopeless real quick. I was like, should I just put this out? And I never heard out. And I never heard anything back. So I was like, it's out, whatever. So it was more, that was really born out of just wanting to get out there and play some music. So it doesn't really make a ton of sense as a record. As far as stylistically, it's kind of a little bit all over the place, and it's fun. And it doesn't, my way of thinking about it is I want whatever I do as a solo project to be fun and to be about just music for music's sake and not really have to make a ton of sense. Certainly, like, there are things that I'm going to write that are going to feel more cohesive, and there are things that are going to write that are going to feel more maybe like B-sides, and there are things that are going to be more like jazz influence, and there are going to be things that sound more acoustic, but, yeah, who knows? But I did those shows with Ethan. It was a ton of fun. I had such a good time with him and had fun playing these songs and kind of trying that out. I've never done anything like that as like a solo performer, so that was a lot of fun. And then a few months back, Jamie Arthurs is a friend of mine who used to manage Bayside back in the early days, reached out to me and asked if I would be interested in doing a 10-day run with Nathan Gray. And I was like, yes, absolutely. I was like, if he wants to do it with me, like, I would love to. So that kind of presented itself and just jumped at the chance to do it. So yeah, it's one of those things. At the moment, I'm trying to figure out what the tour should be. Like, I have my EP, which is some material. I'm kind of writing a bunch of different things right now. I'm writing some more like instrumental based things that are more kind of, instrumental guitar soloist things that I'm running through loops. And, you know, I have other songs that are more kind of that are more like rock oriented, and I have some more songs that are jazz oriented. So I'm kind of just trying to figure out what to develop to add some new stuff in and probably play a couple of covers and just get out there and try my best. But it's fun. And I keep it pretty loose. I mean, not the playing. I'm trying to play as well as possible. Obviously I'm not up there just like hacking my way through a set, but, I like to keep it fun, and I think that I could be wrong, and I obviously don't know too much about what people like, because nothing I'm listening to really strikes too much of a chord with a lot of people anymore, but I do like to just have a variety of different things, and for people who are a fan of my playing, I think it's interesting. I'm hoping that it's interesting for somebody to come up and watch me play a bunch of songs that don't sound anything like Bayside. But you might be able to pick out elements of what I do in my solo show as like more influences than what I do in Bayside. People are like, oh, I could see how this might have turned into this song, this Bayside song, or how this, I recognize like a pattern that might be that I've heard, or I recognize that style of playing. So that's where that lives at the moment. I know Nathan has a very defined thing, and he's been, you know, he has multiple releases, So I'm truly honored to be going out with him, because I know right now I'm a little bit fast and loose with it, just trying to have fun and play some music for some people. I don't know Nathan very well at all, so like it's gonna be a lot of fun to be able to just. It'll be Nathan, myself, and Jamie, who's our mutual friend, in a car or in a minivan, whatever, for 10 days, just kind of traveling around, going up the kind of down the mid-Atlantic into Florida and then up into Nashville. So it's going to be a really excellent opportunity for us to get to know each other, to kind of see each other play a lot, and, you know, we'll see what happens over the course of 10 days. But I'm super excited. It's also kind of refreshing as, you know, having toured in the same band for so long. One of my favorite takeaways from the tour with Ethan is just being able to go and tour and have it be something completely different from sort of my day job, which, you know, where you go in and I love playing a bass out. It's my favorite thing. But it's also, you know, it's like we play the same set for 5 weeks at a time and we're playing the same songs and it's so very rehearsed. And if things go wrong, it's, you know, like it's the end of the world. You're like, what is happening? What's happening with this? It's just kind of like, this is fun. We'll see what happens. I'm not super stressed. It's just, where are we playing tonight? Well, we're going to Orlando. They're like, great. Like, this will be fun. We'll see what happens. Who knows? I don't have no idea. I have no expectations. We'll see what happens.
That's awesome, man. Where can people find your EP?
It's all streaming on all of the stuff. Streaming on like Spotify. Streaming on you can buy it on Amazon, on iTunes, but any of those things. If you just search for Jack O'Shea, O-S-H-E-A, the EP is called Number One. And self-released, self-recorded. We didn't really have any affiliation with anything on this, which I'm kind of pleased. I think as whatever I'm doing develops and becomes more, and as I'm adding more material into the banks, so to speak, we'll see how it's distributed then. But as of right now, I'm just really enjoying writing music for music's sake.
That's awesome, man. Well, thank you so much for giving me a call tonight and hanging out and doing the show. I appreciate it.
Yeah, not at all. I'm really glad you had me, and I'm really glad you finally listened to Bayside. Took you long enough. Thanks.
Yeah. Yeah, right. I'm glad I discovered it too, because I wouldn't even know. Hey, you never, you know, people always say, like, what is it? Like, after the age of 30, you quit discovering new music, and I'm past that. And I'm like, that's just not true, man.
It isn't true. And I feel like I am very much stuck. I do still love so intensely the things that I loved a long time ago. And I still am going to, when I think about the things that I primarily listen to, are things that I kind of had grown up with or that were impactful for me at certain points. And it's difficult, especially with things that have like maybe lesser production value or that you grew up listening to that don't sound as good as they did as you remembered them. But it's like music is so personal and has such a, I mean, it's like a scent or a visual or something that just brings you back to a certain part of your life. So I'm going to always have a hard time letting go of music that was important for me for however many reasons that I grew up with, and I'm always going to really gravitate towards that. But I have discovered, I'm 42 now, and I have discovered so much new things to listen to and so many things that I would have never heard of before that I still could appreciate. I think that it's easy to say that, like, I don't listen to any new music. And I say that sometimes, but I realize that's not true at all. I do listen to a lot of new stuff. But the things I keep going back to are the ones that are old AF.
Sure, I think I've mentioned Fugazi about 1,000 times on this show since I've taken over as host, and it's like, yeah, I grew up outside of DC, like, Fugazi is everything in punk rock, right? Like, it's like, Fugazi, everybody loves Fugazi, right? But it's like, I could still discover Bayside in the last 2 weeks, right?
I certainly, that was one of the ones that was, I had a couple of friends that were very, I wouldn't say musically adventurous in high school at all. And I remember taking them to go see, I remember dragging a handful of kids or my friends to see Fugazi in 91 in Worcester, and those kids became like lifelong super like it was almost like I brought some jocks to a Fugazi show, and they were like, "Oh my god, I had no idea." I'm like, "I know, right?" Like, just such a visceral energy. It's like, this is just intense. Like, everybody is like super respectful, and I really loved the way that they handled the crowd, and just like, I liked that they kept their prices down, but it was like just such an emotional, powerful, like, just energy in that room. And that's definitely one of the best. I remember a couple of times seeing them that are easily in my top five live concert, live music experiences of all time.
Yeah.
Period. Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. Love them. I could talk about Fugazi forever, but we won't.
Yeah. Way to stick Fugazi in at the end. Yeah. Nice.
It's my mission in life to make sure people know about Fugazi.
Well, the more people listen to them, the better. Go out and get Margin Walker and then have your life changed. That was the one for me. Margin Walker got me in, then Repeater, and then I went backwards. And then right when Steady Diet came out, then that was that. And I was like, all right, I'm in. Let's do this.
Thanks for listening to As the Story Grows. Our theme song was written and composed by the legendary Bob Nana. If you like what you hear, subscribe on iTunes and give the show a rating and review. If you'd like to support the show financially, click on the Patreon link at asthestorygrows.com. If you enjoyed this episode, share it on social media with your friends. Much appreciated, and thanks for listening. I never thought so.